Welcome to Lead Follow, a podcast for pastors and leaders, hosted by MCUSA Executive Director Glenn Guyton. Join Glenn as he talks to folks across the denomination to help equip today's leaders who are leading while following Jesus.
Hello, I'm Glenn Guyton, and during this season of Lead Follow, we'll be exploring ways to engage with youth and young adults from Gen Alpha to Gen Z. Today, I am pleased to welcome Alicia Manning, who will be discussing welcoming youth in all aspects of church life. Alicia Manning is a member of C3 Church in Hampton, Virginia. She's an educator, minister, caretaker, and entrepreneur. Whew, that's a lot. As CEO of IC Solutions, LLC, and Club Z Tutoring Services, Alicia has expertise in organizational change and development, student progress, student achievement, and family-community partnerships. Alicia and her husband, Sean Manning, have served as foster parents for traumatized children with therapeutic needs for more than a decade. She holds a master's degree in business administration and an education specialist degree. All right, Alicia, welcome. So much, so good to have you here.
Good to see you, Glenn. Good to be here with you.
All right, I have a question for you. I always start off with this question with my guests. But okay. If you could give your 13-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
It would definitely be to lean in to the voice of God. I think as a 13-year-old, the first few times that I recall God nudging or speaking to me, I was a little afraid and did not really know exactly what to do with that. But I think if I could go back and whisper to myself to lean in, not just to listen and be obedient, but to really listen for God. Listen for opportunities where he's speaking or maybe speaking, because he can talk to us in so many different facets in so many different ways. And right. So as a 13-year-old, you know, with a two-parent household that was rather strict, I came up with understanding a whole lot of the Old Testament side of God.
Okay.
So lean in. Yeah.
So do you think your parents kind of scared you then? Like you were like, oh, Lord, I don't want to make a mistake. Or what was it? Where did the fear come from?
I think it was a healthy fear. You know, that's the beginning. Okay. It's the beginning of wisdom. But I don't. Okay. I think at that time, I didn't have a personal relationship with God for myself. It wasn't really for me until I went off to college that I started to cultivate that personal relationship, you know, being away from mom and dad and away from grandma. Yeah. You can't just rest assured and ride on your family's relationship with God. You have to get to know him for yourself. Yeah.
Now, do you think that's just a normal process for all of us that we all kind of go through as kids? That I was raised in church, two kids that were raised in church and then kind of get thrust out in the world. Do you think this is kind of normal how it works?
I don't know if it's normal per se, but it was definitely my experience. And I think sometimes for those of us who were raised in churches or raised in congregations, it's very easy to get acclimated and to get used to, you know, knowing God through other people and knowing God through family and the community that you have. Especially if you don't have any major challenges, but like, you know, if you keep on living, life happens, life happens. At some point you will need to know him for yourself. And so for me, more of those experiences happen as I ventured off for my first real time away from home, going to college.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, all right, we have to have a talk, God. This is, now I know your voice and I know our voice. And understanding more of the freedom in God, the freedom, not just the do's and the don'ts, but the freedom that lies therein.
Yeah. So you said something interesting, and I guess I'll get to my questions at some point. But you talked about like kind of being safe and not really having to go through a whole bunch of like trauma. And I remember, you know, early on hearing people saying, oh, this person has a great testimony. I'm like, they done been through hell. Why is that a great testimony? I think it's a different challenge when, again, like you said, you might not have been through a whole bunch of stuff growing up because you had two parents, you had this protective environment. Your parents kind of put the boundaries there that you had to follow. But then you get out in the real world and you said, okay, there's some stuff going on now. So yeah, what do you say about that as we, you know, for some of us that have kids and we're bringing them from this stable environment and casting them out into the world?
Wow. We might not get to the other questions, Glenn. We might not get to the other questions. So I think right. that there, I think as a parent and then coming up, you know, being raised by grandmothers, I had, you know, grandmothers, great grandmothers on both sides coming up. And so our family structure was really stable, but it was layered. And yeah. so in that way, my family and community created a really good
yeah.
bubble, if you will. But it was so protected yeah. and there was so much safety in it that there were some opportunities yeah. that I think would have been best for me to have where maybe I had to yeah. Do more self-directed things and where my parents began to kind of push me a little bit out of my comfort zone, a little bit out of mm-hmm. the nest in terms of making some decisions before I was in a point where I had to make them and I had to get them right. I needed to get them right yeah. the first time without the cost of time or expense associated with making them incorrectly. And so I think that,
yeah,
I think sometimes as parents, we get so acclimated to thinking about our sweethearts as always okay. being little and young and us making the decision for them and not really ensuring uh-huh. that they cultivate the practice, the critical thinking skills, the process of thinking, problem solving, trying this out, seeing that it doesn't work, and having okay. the safety net within the family structure, within the community. To fall, dust yourself off, get on back up, try it again, but to get that practice before you uh-huh. leave the house, right? To get that practice, to know that you know that even if you make the decision and it doesn't pan out the way that you anticipated, it's okay. Like that yeah. won't be the first time that you've kind of fallen or lost your way or whatever. You've done that and you know how to push past it. You have the tenacity, the wherewithal yeah. to lose all your marbles and fall to pieces and whatnot. you can get up and go. And so yeah. I think my parents were really diligent, especially about wanting us to just do well, that
yeah.
we were in a really great bubble. And yeah. And there were a lot of do's and don'ts. There were a lot of do's and mm-hmm. don'ts. And so by the time we got ready to go to college, I know for my brother and I, it was like, ooh, it was a oh, lot wow. of freedom all at once and a yeah. lot of choices and decisions that you knew what you should do, but you also yeah. didn't have as much practice as I wish I had making decisions yeah. for myself without having my mother make them or my father making them, but me making the decision and going through the process of really, you know, determining, is this the best decision for me? And if so, why mm. or why not?
Wow. That's some good stuff. We could spend a whole day on that topic. So just for full disclosure, I know Alicia very well. We started at the same church, so C3 in Hampton, Virginia. So I was a youth pastor there for a number of years. So I'm really excited about this time and to hear what's on Alicia's mind. But I think you give a good segue. So you talk about this bubble, and you know, we want to talk about church life. So how do we foster a sense of belonging and ownership within the congregation? Mm-hmm. So I think this is kind of in line with that. So I'll go ahead and ask a question, but what are some practical ways that churches can empower young people to actively participate in the decision-making process, ministry leadership, and overall life and mission of the church? But I want to add a little piece of that, but to also practice, right? You talk about practice. So how do we How do we as a church facilitate some of that practice that you talked about so that they get the reps in before they're cast out into the world?
I think there are a lot of different parts to that answer. And so to kind of unpack it, I would encourage first, we need to listen to youth. We really need to cultivate a relationship with them. And you can't have a relationship with people. You can't really get to know people without spending quality time with them. And quality time, sometimes as adults working with youth, we think about that quality time very differently. We think about that quality time sometimes where we've decided what the two will do, or we've decided what needs to be done, or what things are going to be discussed, as opposed to allowing it to be a bit more youth directed, a bit more of an opportunity for the young person to do the majority of the talking. And we listen, and I mean listen, not listen to judge or listen to critique or listen to find fault with, but to listen to get to know our youth. And so I think one of the preliminary steps is really being open and genuinely receptive to opportunities and seeking them out where we can get to know our young people. I spent some time with a teenager in our congregation who's actually transitioning there to your great state of Texas very soon.
Okay,
I think she's even moving to San Antonio. I think she's coming to San Antonio.
Right, tell look me up.
I already have. Okay. So just in the quality time, you know, she taught me a couple of things that I wouldn't have known had I not spent time with her to understand a little bit more about what's important to her and what's on her mind. And so I think primarily we need to establish rapport and relationship with the youth in our congregation. And that requires some time more than anything. Doesn't require often a whole lot of money or a whole lot of a budget or time management and thinking through a whole bunch of detailed plans, but just making it a priority to spend time with our youth. So I would say that is first and foremost. Additionally, having a mindset of youth development really helps. And so sometimes when we think about planning and organizing events for the youth, as adults, sometimes we can totally miss the mark in planning these things for them, doing these things for them, and not really ever starting the conversation by asking them what would they like to do, what's important to them, and co-laboring with them, getting them involved so that it's not just an event for the youth, but it's an event that we can sponsor for the youth, by the youth, with the youth.
Right.
So there's a different kind
with
of partnership.
The, yeah.
Yeah. When we think about youth development, we often think more of mentorship and coaching and co-laboring. It's really the opportunity to teach and to train, but it's also you being receptive as an adult to listen to and to ask for, to be very intentional about asking for the ideas and the thoughts that young person brings to the table. Because sometimes, Glenn, we could learn a thing or two. And sometimes kids really great suggestions and ideas, but they may not yet have the confidence or the wherewithal or understanding the process and planning that we may know from experience. And so together we can really come up with something that speaks a bit more directly to what's needed and that youth feel like they're really a part of. So we partner with them. That comes across, it lands very differently than doing something for them and not taking the time to really involve them on the front end and make sure that what we have in mind is really what's most pertinent.
Yeah. And so as you talked earlier on about, like, you know, opportunity to practice and try some things out, I like what you came back to, this co-laboring. I do think often we try to do too much for kids. Like, it's a balance. We want to provide that safety net. We want to provide somewhat of a bubble, but we got to let them stick their head out of that bubble every now and then. And if we do it alongside of them, I think it has a couple of benefits that you mentioned. One is that we can help kids young adults know like the processes and systems and things like that, you know, how these things work. But then they can also show us something. They can teach us something and allow us to see things in a new light. Like, why are y'all doing it that way? It makes no sense. I think that push pull is wonderful. You know, I remember like when we had events for the young people at Calvary, they were always involved, right? They were in the kitchen, they were serving people, they were hosting. I think those things are really helpful because it wasn't just a bunch of adults doing everything. No, the kids had to get actively involved in the success of whatever program we had.
Mm-hmm. And it creates buy-in in a different kind of way. It number one, it shows our youth that they're important. We value them. We need them. And when they understand that there's a mm-hmm. little bit of purpose associated with, it's not just I'm showing up to church because mom and dad are going and I have to go with them, but they have, you know, they can kind of orient that to how they are contributing to the service, how they're involved. It creates a different kind of experience in terms of community. And that's really what, and it comes back to relationship, but that community can minister to the hearts and minds of youth in a unique way that sometimes we don't think about, you know, as same or as similarly as we do with like being on the pulpit and preaching. But it's still ministry. Yeah. It's still ministry. And sometimes mm-hmm. with young people, I think they're more receptive to that. And it allows us to see some things. Because when you're working with someone or you're traveling with, you did so many trips with our C3 youth, and they were always eager to go, you know, and they weren't easy trips. They wasn't all about fun. Right. They were very much volunteer oriented, so that there was always some form of mission work in them. And so I think when we work with children or with youth, we get to see as adults areas where maybe we need to be more prayerful or more intentional about the time we spend with them going forward. And it also helps us to recalibrate. It may be a good teachable moment in reflection for us to talk with that youth to say, well, how could we problem solve a little bit better or a little bit more a little less mm-hmm. emotionally, or to work through and talk about some of the emotions that came up. And so we can't do that if we're just sending them off to do and we're not laboring alongside them.
Yeah. So do you have any specific advice that you would give for church leaders to really listen well and to get the the real opinions of the young people kind of integrated into the work that we're doing?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think, and it's, you know, it's nothing super fancy, but I think, number one, just to be intentional about it. Sometimes when we endeavor to do something really well, we bite off way, way more than we can chew, as a congregation or as an individual even. And so just being intentional about where we are choosing to invest our time and our energy. And then starting with that, however small it may be, but being consistent with it. Okay. And in that way, you know, a lot of times youth will see what we are doing and they will mm-hmm. hear what we are doing. But what often registers mm-hmm. with folks most memorably is, do your actions line up with what you said? And if they don't, it's a missed opportunity. And so starting small,
you do a lot of harm.
That's it. Starting small, but being consistent, that's super helpful. And then looking for creative partnerships, not just in the church community, but even in the area, like the town, the locale, the city, in terms of community partnerships, so that you can forge a better allocation of resources and so that you can also create more layers of support for young people. I think too, within the congregation, it's especially helpful that we look for, and I don't know a fancy way to say this, this doesn't sound super professional, but looking for a way to flip the script. That's what I call it. Oftentimes we have negative Oftentimes we have negative narratives about young people and teenagers and looking for opportunities where we allow them to lead and to share with us more about what they know. And I'll give you one example. There's one that I have been thinking about, and I have whispered into the ears of a few folks in our congregation about it to hopefully see how it's going to launch. But we have a generation in many of our congregations where there's a lot of technology that our adults and our senior saints do not know how to utilize or utilize with ease, even on their cell phones. And so increasingly more and more of what we do day to day, and even within our congregations, requires a bit more tech savviness. And so our young people, they know how to download apps. They know how to be able to send group chat messages. They know about the different emoticons. They know all of that with ease. They can do it in 5 minutes and give you your phone right back. So I think there's a teaching opportunity for us to allow our youth to lead some of those one-on-one interactions and conversations. And many of our older congregants would appreciate that. Like, they just want to learn. They want to be able to take advantage of the technology that they have. And they want someone who will give them the time and the attention. And so I think it's a unique opportunity waiting to happen. But in that way, by flipping the script, we are not necessarily micromanaging that as adults. We're not necessarily telling children what to do. They already know, and to some degree better than we do. And so it's really just about creating the opportunity and encouraging them to move forward with that.
Yeah, that's great. Creating those opportunities. You said looking for creative partnerships. I think one of the mistakes that we make as churches, especially if you're a small congregation, is trying to do everything yourself. You don't have to do everything yourself. You can partner with people in the community. You can provide information to young people to know where they can get plugged in. You can help parents vet different opportunities. So you don't have to do it yourself, but you know, create these partnerships. Consistency. Yes, I think that is one of the things that we overlook. And so we're talking about creating this environment for welcoming youth to all aspects of church life. I mean, kids, they listen though, right? They listen to the stuff that we don't want them to hear. That's the thing. Like, they hear the stuff that we hope that they don't hear, but they pay attention to that. How we're treating someone, if we're talking about other leaders behind their back, if we're creating this hostile culture where everybody's angry and mad at each other, that's what the kids are going to think church is about. Why would I want to go there? All those people are hypocrites. They hate each other. They act like they don't want to be here. They don't respect leadership. They respect authority. They don't respect these other adults. But you want me to be a part of this organization because church is so great.
Yeah. Yeah. They
watch, right? They see.
Mm-hmm. They really do.
Okay, well, we talked about a couple of things about listening to young people and giving them some opportunities to work and show their gifts in the church. But ultimately, I think we want to focus on discipleship. So how can we create this culture of discipleship that really equips the young people for that next phase of life that you talked about early on?
So I think that too goes back to the partnerships. We have opportunities to partner within the congregation and then within the community at large. And so as it pertains to partnering within the congregation, I don't think we need to overcomplicate it. It's really about looking for the areas that we already have operations, or we already have things that we're in the process of doing in the congregation, and then finding out which youth are most interested in working in those different areas, and then partnering them with a responsible adult who will help to coach, help to mentor and train them in that arena. And I think from there, things can go even further. And one of the things that I've seen happen at C3 Hampton that's really been amazing is that some of these areas, instead of having youth participate as though they were like a second tier kind of person or not someone who had the same ability or wherewithal to serve, they came on, our youth were trained just like our adult learners were trained. And in doing so, now we have certain ministries that are predominantly supported by our youth. Most of our camera positions are operated by our youth, not our adults. And so I think it's been really advantageous to do it that way. It's definitely helped to create a deeper bench for people who know and understand and can handle those different operations. But I think it's given our youth a greater realm of possibility and knowing that they have so many different things from which they can choose to participate in if they so desire. More importantly, though, many of them have learned some real marketable skills, some skills that they can take with them and use not only at the college level, but in the workforce. And I don't think that we often consider it that way, but they're learning real life teachable skills that translate to earning potential once they are they're out of the school age.
Man, that's great. Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. We're creating disciples, people that can go out, and everyone's not going to be a pastor or Sunday school teacher or work in ministry, but we need Christian people in these other industries, areas of influence. And the church could be is the perfect proving ground for some of that. And so, you know, I hear you saying that you have ministries and you have things that are going on at the church. Just plug in young people. They can handle it. It's not rocket science. They can handle it. So they can be the equivalent of whatever. They can help serve food. They can usher. They can do all these things. So just get the young people involved. Now, I don't know how many people listening to this podcast are Kirk Franklin fans, but I remember him telling stories about how he was 11 years old directing a choir, right? Now he's a Grammy award winning worldwide gospel artist, but somebody trust now 11 years old is too young to be directing stuff, but he had a gift, right? And the people at the church recognized that gift. He knew what he was supposed to do. And now again, his gift has taken him all over the world and he's influenced people regardless of what you think about his theology or anything like that. But we can do the same thing in our churches. We can inspire young people. We can recognize their gifts and we can get them working, get them working, put them to work. Don't just always have a separate thing for them, sending them off somewhere into oblivion where you never see them. No, they need to do this thing alongside you and be co-laborers. Yeah. Co-laborers in this work.
Well, the Bible says for us to know those who labor amongst us. And so I think that we have a specific call and responsibility to do that, not only as it relates to our youth, but to one another. And when our youth see this and they experience it and the camaraderie and the closeness that comes from it, they want to then do the same thing. Once they understand how much we invest in them, it's pretty productive in generating the sense that they too want to be able to pour into others. And that's really what discipleship is. It's not this selfish thing that we hold and we reserve for this one that we like versus that one that we don't. But I think we demonstrate a very Christ-like attitude when we do it this way. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. And just one tip from me is make sure when you put them alongside that adult, make sure it's an adult that's trusted, that's proven, that has a good attitude. Don't put them with somebody that's going to mess them up.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And we want to make sure we do background checks and, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed in advance of that. So that we are pouring like into like. Yeah, we want to make sure that we are improving.
Mm-hmm. All right, I like that.
Thank you, Glenn.
All right, well, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, Alicia, for your time. And just kind of on that note, please check out our Safe Church resources in Mennonite Church USA. We have resources, tips, We can help you with background checks. So check those out on our website. And for the latest news and events from Mennonite Church USA, please subscribe to Piecemeal, our weekly email newsletter at MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. And we also ask that you prayerfully consider supporting the ongoing work of Mennonite Church USA, our ministries. You can go to MennoniteUSA.org/give, and we are thankful for your support and your contributions. You all have a wonderful day. This is Glenn Guyton.